He sat down on the steps to the house and fished out a cigar. So that was it then. Bloody politics again. It was always bloody politics or bloody diplomatics. Bloody lies in smart clothing. Once you got off the streets, criminals just flowed through your fingers. The King and Lady Margalotta and Vetinari, they always looked at some sort of big picture. Vimes knew he was, and always would be, a little picture man. Dee was useful, so she'd probably get, oh, a few days breaking bread or whatever it was they gave you here for being naughty. After all she'd destroyed was a fake, wasn't it? Was it? But she'd thought she was committing a much bigger crime. That ought to mean something in Sam Vimes's personal gallery of little pictures. And the Baroness was as guilty as hell. People had died. As for Wolfgang, well, some people were just built guilty. It was as simple as that. Anything they did became a crime simply because it was them doing it. He blew out a stream of smoke. People like that shouldn't be allowed to simply die their way out of things. But he hadn't, had he? The wolves had gone a long way down the river, Sybil had said, on both banks. There wasn't a sniff of him. Further down was a mass of rapids and another fall. What couldn't kill him would certainly make him wish it could. If he'd gone downstream. But upstream there was nothing but wild water too, right up to the town. No, he couldn't. Surely no one could swim up a waterfall. A chilly little feeling began at the back of Vimes's neck. But any sensible person would get right out of the country, wouldn't they? The wolves were looking for him. Tantony wouldn't remember him fondly. And if Vimes judged the King correctly, then the dwarfs would have some dark little revenge in store, too. The trouble was that if you formed a picture in your mind of a sensible person and tried to superimpose it on a picture of Wolfgang, you couldn't get them to meet anywhere. There was an old saying, wasn't there? As a dog returneth to its vomit, so a fool returneth to his folly. Well, that got Wolfgang coming and going. Vimes stood up and turned around carefully. There was no one there. Sounds came in from the street gateway, people laughing, the sound of a harness, the clank of a shovel clearing up last night's snow. He sidled into the embassy, his back to the wall, and groped his way towards the stairs, peering into every doorway. He ran across the expanse of the hallway, did a tumbling roll, and ended up against the far wall. "Is there anything wrong, sir?" said Cheery. She was watching him from the top of the stairs. "Have you seen anything odd?" said Vimes, dusting himself off self-consciously. "And I realise we're talking about a house with Igor in it. Could you give me a hint, sir? Wolfgang, goddammit!" "But he's dead, sir, isn't he?" "Not dead enough."
What do you want me to do?"
"Where's Detritus?"
"Polishing his helmet, sir," said Cheery, on the point of panic.
"What the hell is he wasting time with that for?"
Because we're supposed to leave for the coronation in 10 minutes, sir."
"Oh, yes."
"Lady Sybil told me to come and find you, in a very distinct tone of voice, sir."
At which point, Sybil's voice boomed along the corridor.
"Sam Vimes, you come here!"
"That one, sir," Cheery added helpfully.
Vimes trailed into the bedroom. Sybil was wearing another blue dress, a tiara, and a firm expression.
"Is it a posh do?" said Vimes. "I thought if I put on a clean shirt..."
"Your official dress uniform is in the dressing room," said Sybil.
"It was a rather long day yesterday."
"This is a coronation, Samuel Vimes. It is not a come-as-you-are. Go and get dressed quickly, including, and I don't want to have to say this twice, the helmet with the feathers."
"But not the red tights," said Vimes, hoping against hope. "Please."
"The red tights, Sam, go without saying."
"They go at the knees," said Vimes. But it was the grumble of the defeated.
"I'll ring for Igor to come and help you."
"Things will have come to a pretty pass when I can't put my own tights on, dear, thank you."
Vimes dressed hurriedly, listening for anything. Some creak in the wrong place, perhaps. At least this was a watch uniform, even if it did have buckled shoes. It included a sword. The duking outfit didn't allow for one, which had always struck Vimes as amazingly stupid. You got made a duke for being a fighter, then they gave you nothing to fight with. There was a tinkle of glass back in the bedroom, and Lady Sybil was astonished to see her husband enter at a run with his sword raised.
"I dropped the top of a scent bottle, Sam. What's up with you? Even Angua says he's probably miles away and in no shape to cause trouble. Why are you so nervy?"
Vimes put down the sword and tried to relax.
"Because our Wolfgang's a damned bottle covey, dear. I know the sort. Any normal person, they crawl off if they get a beating. Or they have the sense to stay down, at least. But sometimes you get one who just won't let go. 8-stone weaklings who'll try to headbutt detritus. Evil little bantamweight bastards who'll bust a bottle on the bar and try to attack 5 watchmen all at once. You know what I mean? Idiots who'll go on fighting long after they should stop. The only way to put them down is to put them out."
"I think I recognise the type, yes," said Lady Sybil, with an irony that failed to register with Sam Vimes until some days later.
She picked some lint off his cloak.
"He's going to be back. I can feel it in me water," mumbled Vimes.
"Sam?"
"Yes?"
"Can I have your attention for a couple of minutes? Wolfgang is Angua's problem, not yours. I really need to talk to you very quietly for a little while without you running off after werewolves."
She said it as if this was a minor character flaw, like a tendency to leave his boots where people could trip over them.
They run after me," he pointed out.
"But there's always people being found dead or trying to kill you."
"I don't ask them to, dear."
"Sam, I'm going to have a baby."
Vimes's head was full of werewolves, and his automatic husbandly circuitry cut in ready to respond with, "Yes, dear," or "Choose any colour you'd like," or "I'll get someone to sort it out." Fortunately, his brain itself had its own sense of self-preservation, and, not wishing to be inside a skull that was stoved in by a bedside lamp, rewrote Sybil's words in white-hot fire across his inner eyeball, and then went and hid. That's why the response came out as a weak,
"What? How?
The normal way, I hope."
Vimes sat down on the bed.
"And not right now?"
"I very much doubt it, but Mrs. Content says it's definite, and she's been a midwife for 50 years.
"Oh."
Some more brain functions crept back.
"Good. That's good.
It'll probably take a while to sink in."
"Yes."
Another neuron lit up.
Everything will be all right, will it?"
"What do you mean?"
You're not as... you...
"Sam, my family have been bred for breeding. It's an aristocratic tradition. Of course everything will be all right."
"Oh. Good."
Vimes sat and stared. His head felt like some vast sea that had just been parted by a prophet. Where there should have been activity, there was just bare sand and the occasional floundering fish. But huge, steep waves were tottering on either side, and in a minute they would crash down and cause cities to flood 100 miles away. More glass tinkled, somewhere downstairs.
"Sam, Igor's probably just dropped something," said Sybil, seeing his expression. "That's all. Probably just knocked over a glass."
There was a snarl and a scream abruptly cut off. Vimes leapt off the bed.
"Lock the door after me and push the bed against it."
He paused for a moment in the doorway.
"Without straining yourself," he added,
and ran for the stairs.
Wolfgang was trotting across the hall. He was different this time. Wolf ears sprouted from a head that was still human. His hair had grown around him like a mane. Patches of fur were tufted on his skin and were mostly streaked with blood. The rest of him was having trouble deciding what it was. One arm was trying to be a paw. Vimes reached for his sword and remembered that it was back on the bed. He rummaged in his pockets. He knew the other thing was here. He remembered picking it up off the dressing table. His fingers closed on his badge. He held it out.
"Stop! In the name of the law!"
Wolfgang looked up at him, one eye glowing yellow. The other was a mess.
"Hello, civilized," he growled. "You wait for me, hey?"
He ducked into the corridor that led to the room where Carrot lay. Vimes tried to catch him up, saw claw-tipped fingers curl around the door and hurl it out of its frame. Carrot was reaching for his sword, and then Wolfgang was flying backwards under the full weight of Angua. They landed back in the hall, a rolling ball of fur, claws and teeth. When werewolf fights werewolf, there are advantages to either shape. It's an eternal struggle to get a position where hands beat claws, and body shapes have lives of their own, a dangerous attribute if it is allowed to act unchecked. A cat's instinct is to jump on something that moves, but this is not a correct action if what is moving has a fizzing fuse. The mind has to fight its own body for control, and the other body for survival. Mix this together, and the noise suggests that there are four creatures in the whirling ball of rage, and each one of them has brought several friends, and none of them like any of the others. A shadow made Vimes spin round. Detritus, in shining armour, was aiming the peacemaker over the banister.
"Sergeant! No, you'll hit Angua too."
"Not a problem, sir," said Detritus, "'cause it won't kill 'em, so all we have to do, see, is sort out the bits that are Wolfgang and belt him over the head when he gets himself back together."
"If you fire that in here, his bits will be mixed up with our bits, and there won't be big bits. Put the damn thing down."
Wolfgang couldn't control his shape well, Vimes saw. He couldn't quite manage to be full wolf or full human, and Angua was making the most of that. She was ducking, weaving, biting. But even if you could put him down, you couldn't put him out.
"Mr. Vimes?"
Now it was Cheery, beckoning urgently from the passage that led to the kitchen.
"You ought to come here right now."
She was white-faced. Vimes nudged Detritus.
"If they separate, just grab him, right? Just try to hold him still."
Igor was lying in the kitchen, surrounded by broken glass. Wolfgang must have landed on him and taken out his perpetual anger on a soft target. The patchwork man was bleeding heavily and lay like a doll that had been flung hard against a wall.
"Master!" he groaned.
"Can you do anything for him, Cheery?"
"I wouldn't know where to start, sir."
"Master, you got to remember this, right?"
Igor groaned.
Yes, what?"
"You got to get me into the ice house downstairs and let Igor know, understand?"
"Which Igor?" said Vimes desperately.
"Any Igor."
Igor clutched at Vimes's sleeve.
"Me heart's had it, but my liver's as right as ninepence, tell him. Nothing wrong with my brain that a good bolt of lightning won't thought out. Igor can have me right hand. He's got a customer waiting. There's years of good service left in my lower intestine. Left eye not up to much, but I dare say some poor soul can find a use for it. The right knee is nearly new. Old Miss Podsky down the road would value my hip joints, tell him. Got all that?"
"Yes, yes, I think so."
"Right. Remember, what goes around comes around."
Igor sank down.
"He's gone, sir," said Cheery.
"But he'll soon be up and on someone else's feet," Vimes thought. He didn't say it aloud. Cheery was soft-hearted. Instead, he said, "Can you get him to his ice house? By the sound of it, Angua's winning." He ran back into the hall. It was a wreck. As he arrived, Angua managed to get a headlock on Wolfgang and ran him into a wooden pillar. He staggered, and she spun and scythed his legs from under him with a kick. "I taught her that," Vimes thought, as her brother landed heavily. "Some of that dirty fighting, that's Ankh-Morpork fighting, that is." But Wolfgang was up again like a rubber ball, and somersaulting over her head. That brought him to the front door. He smashed it open with a blow and leapt out into the street. And that was it. A room full of debris, snowflakes blowing in, and Angua sobbing on the floor. He picked her up. She was bleeding in a dozen places. That was as much of a diagnosis as Sam Vimes, not used these days to surveying naked young women at close quarters, thought he could decently attempt. "It's all right. He's gone," he said, because he had to say something.
"It's not all right. He'll lie low for a while, and then he'll be back. I know him. It won't matter where we go. You've seen him. He'll just track us down and follow us, and then he'll kill Carrot."
"Why?"
"Because Carrot's mine."
Sybil advanced down the stairs, carrying Vimes's crossbow.
"Oh, you poor thing," she said. "Come here. Let's find something to cover you up. Sam, isn't there something you can do?"
Vimes stared at her. Built into Sybil's expression was the unquestioning assumption that he could do something. An hour ago, he'd been having breakfast. 10 minutes ago, he'd been putting on his stupid uniform, in a real room with his wife. And it had been a real world with a real future. And suddenly the dark was back, spattered with red rage. And if he gave in to it, he'd lose. That was the beast screaming inside, and Wolfgang was a better beast. Vimes knew he didn't have the knack, the mindless, driving nastiness. Sooner or later, his brain would start operating and kill him. "Perhaps," said his brain, "you start by using me."
"Yes," he said, "yes, I think there is something I can do."
Fire and silver, thought Vimes. Well, silver's in pretty short supply in Uberwald.
"Do you want I should come?" said Detritus.
who could pick up signals.
"No, I think I want to make an arrest. I don't want to start a war. Anyway, you need to wait here in case he doubles back. But you could lend me your penknife."
Vimes found a sheet in one of the broken boxes and tore off a long strip. Then he took his crossbow from his wife.
"You see, now he's committed a crime in Ankh-Morpork," he said. "That makes him mine."
"Sam, we're not,
you know. Everyone kept telling me I wasn't in Ankh-Morpork so often I believed it. But this embassy is Ankh-Morpork, and right now," he hefted the bow, "I am the law."
"Sam."
"Yes, dear?"
"I know that look. Don't hurt anyone else, will you?"
"Don't worry, dear. I'm going to be civilized about it."
There was a cluster of dwarfs in the street outside, surrounding one lying on the snow in a pool of blood.
"Which way?" said Vimes.
And if they didn't understand his words, they understood the question. Several of them pointed along the street. As he walked, Vimes cradled the crossbow and lit a thin cigar. Now this he understood. He was never at ease with politics, where good and bad were just, apparently, two ways of looking at the same thing, or at least were described like that by the people who were on the side Vimes thought of as bad. It was all too complicated. And where it was complicated, it meant that someone was trying to fool you. But on the street, in hot pursuit, it was all so clear. Someone was going to be still standing at the end of the chase, and all you had to concentrate on was making sure it was you. On a street corner, a cart had overturned, and its driver was kneeling by a horse that had been ripped open.
"Which way?"
the man pointed. The new street was wider, busier, and there were a number of elegant coaches moving slowly through the crowds. Of course, the coronation. But that belonged to the world of the Duke of Ankh, and right now he wasn't here. There was only Sam Vimes, who didn't much like coronations. There were screams up ahead, and the flow of people was suddenly against Vimes, so that he appeared to be heading upstream like a salmon. The street opened into a large square. People were running now, which suggested to Vimes that he was still moving in the right direction. It was pretty clear that you'd find Wolfgang somewhere no one else wanted to be. There was a flurry of movement on one side of him, and a squad of the town guard trotted past. They halted. One of them walked back. It was Tantony. He looked Vimes up and down.
"I have you to thank for last night," he said.
There were fresh scars on his face, but they were already healing. "We've got to get an Igor," Vimes reminded himself.
"Yes," said Vimes. "The good bits and the bad bits."
"And you see what happens when you stand up to a werewolf?"
Vimes opened his mouth to say,
"Is that a uniform you're wearing, Captain, or is it fancy dress?"
but stopped himself just in time.
"No, it's what happens when you're fool enough to stand up to a werewolf with no backup and no firepower," he said. "I'm sorry, but we all have to learn that lesson. Integrity makes very poor armour."
The man reddened.
"What is your business here?"
he said.
"Our hairy friend just murdered someone in the embassy, which is—"
"Yes, yes, Ankh-Morpork territory. But this isn't. I am the watchman here."
"I'm in hot pursuit, Captain."
"Ah, I see you know the term." That doesn't apply."
"Really? Every copper knows about the rule of hot pursuit. You can chase the suspect over your legal boundary if you're in hot pursuit. Of course, there may be a bit of legal argy-bargy once he's caught, but we can save that for later."
"I intend to arrest him myself for crimes committed today."
"You're too young to die. Besides, I saw him first."
"Tell you what.
After he's killed me, you can have a go. Fair enough?"
He looked Tantony in the eye.
"Now, get out of the way."
"You know I could have you arrested."
"Probably. But until now, I'd got you down as an intelligent man."
Tantony nodded and proved Vimes right.
"All right. How may we be of assistance?"
"By keeping out of the way. Oh, and scraping up my remains if this doesn't work."
Vimes felt the man stare on the back of his neck as he set off again. There was a statue in the middle of the square. It was of the fifth elephant. Some ancient craftsman had tried to achieve in bronze and stone the moment when the allegorical animal had thundered down out of the sky and gifted the country its incredible mineral wealth. Around it were idealized and rather heavy-set figures of dwarfs and men holding hammers and swords and striking noble attitudes. They probably represented truth, industry, justice, and mother's homemade fat pancakes, for all Vimes knew, but he felt truly far from home in a country where, apparently, no one wrote graffiti on public statues. A man was sprawled on the cobbles with a woman kneeling beside him. She looked tearfully at Vimes and said something in Ubervaldian. All he could do was nod.
Wolfgang jumped down from a perch on top of the statue to bad sculpting, and landed a few yards away, grinning.
"Mr. Civilized, you want another game?"
"You see this badge I'm holding up?" said Vimes.
"It's a very small one. But you see it?"
"Yes, I see your little badge."
Wolfgang started to move sideways, arms hanging loosely by his sides.
"And I'm armed. Did you hear me tell you I'm armed? With that silly bow?"
"But you just heard me say I'm armed, yes?"
said Vimes loudly, turning to face the moving werewolf. He puffed on his cigar, letting a glow build up.
"Yes, is this what you call civilized?"
Vimes grinned.
"Yes, this is how we do it. My way is better. And now you're under arrest," said Vimes. "Come along and make no fuss, and we'll tie you securely and hand you over to whatever passes for justice around here. I realize this may be difficult."
"Ha! Your Ankh-Morpork pork sense of humour!"
"Yes, any minute now I'll drop my trousers."
"So you're resisting arrest?"
"Why these stupid questions?"
Now Wolfgang was almost dancing.
"Are you resisting arrest?"
"Yes, indeed, oh yes, good joke."
"Look at me laughing."
Vimes tossed the crossbow aside and swung a tube out from under his cloak. It was made of cardboard, and a red cone protruded from one end.
"A stupid, silly firework!"
shouted Wolfgang, and charged.
"Could be," said Vimes.
He didn't bother to aim. These things were never designed for accuracy or speed. He simply removed his cigar from his mouth, and, as Wolfgang ran towards him, pressed it into the fuse hole. The mortar jerked as the charge went off, and its payload came tumbling out slowly and trailing smoke in a lazy spiral. It looked like the stupidest weapon since the toffee spear. Wolfgang danced back and forth under it, grinning, and as it passed several feet over his head, he leapt up gracefully and caught it in his mouth. And then it exploded. The flares were made to be seen 20 miles away. Even with his eyes tightly shut, Vimes saw the glare through his lids. When the body had stopped rolling, Vimes looked around the square. People were watching him from the coaches. The crowds were silent. There were a lot of things he could say.
"Son of a bitch" would have been a good one. Or he could say, "Welcome to civilization." He could have said, "Laugh this one off." He might have said, "Fetch."
But he didn't. Because if he had said any of those things, then he'd have known that what he had just done was murder. He turned away, tossed the empty mortar over his shoulder, and muttered, "The hell with it." At times like this, teetotalism bit down hard. Tantony was watching.
"Don't say a word out of place," said Vimes, without altering his stride. "Just don't."
"I thought those things shot very fast."
"I cut down the charge," said Vimes,
tossing Detritus's penknife in the air and catching it again.
"I didn't want to hurt anyone."
"I heard you warn him that you were armed. I heard him twice resist arrest. I heard everything. I heard everything you wanted me to hear."
"Yes."
"Of course, he might not have known that law."
"Oh, really? Well, I didn't know it was legal in these parts to chase some poor sod across the country and maul him to death. And do you know, that didn't stop anyone."
Vimes shook his head.
"And don't give me that pained look. Oh, yes, now you can say I did it wrong. You can say I ought to have handled it differently. That sort of thing is easy to say afterwards. I'll say it myself, maybe."
In the middle of every night, he added to himself, "after I've woken up seeing those mad eyes.
But you wanted him stopped as much as I did. Oh, yes, you did. But you couldn't, because you didn't have the means, and I did, because I could. And you've got the luxury of judging me, because you're still alive. And that's the truth of it, all wrapped up. Lucky one for you, eh?"
The crowds parted ahead of Vimes. He could hear whispers around him.
"On the other hand," said Tantony distantly, as if he hadn't heard what Vimes had just said, "you did only fire that thing to warn him."
"Huh?"
"Clearly you were not to know that he would automatically try to catch the explosive," said Tantony,
and it seemed to Vimes that he was rehearsing the line.
"The dog-like qualities of the werewolf could hardly have occurred to a man from the big city."
Vimes held his gaze for a moment, and then patted him on the shoulder.
"Hold on to that thought," he said.
A coach pulled to a halt beside him as he continued on his way. It slid to a stop so silently, not a jingle of harness, not a clop of horseshoe, that Vimes jumped sideways out of shock. The horses were black, with black plumes on their heads. The coach was a hearse, The traditional long glass windows now filled with smoked black glass. There was no driver, the reins were simply loosely knotted on a brass railing. A door swung open. A veiled figure leaned out.
"Your Excellency, do let me give you a lift back to the embassy, you look so tired."
"No, thank you," said Vimes grimly.
"I apologize for the emphasis on black," said Lady Margalotta. "It is rather expected of one on these occasions, I'm afraid."
Vimes swung himself up and into the carriage with furious speed.
"You tell me," he growled, waving a finger under her nose, "how anyone can swim up a vertical waterfall. I was prepared to believe anything about that bastard, but even he couldn't have managed that."
"Certainly that is a puzzle," said the vampire calmly, as the driverless coach moved on. "Superhuman strength, possibly?
And now he's gone, and that's one up for the vampires, eh?"
"I would like to think that it's going to be a blessing for the whole country."
Lady Margalotta leaned back. Her rat, with the bow round its neck, watched Vimes suspiciously from its pink cushion.
"Wolfgang was a sadistic murderer, a throwback who frightened even his own family. Angua will have some peace of mind. An intelligent young lady, I've always thought. Leaving here was the best thing she ever did. The darkness will be a little less frightening. The world will be a better place."
"And I've handed you Oberwald," said Vimes.
"Don't be stupid. Oberwald is large. This is one small part of it. And now it's going to change. You have been a breath of fresh air."
Lady Margalotta drew a long holder from her bag and inserted a black cigarette. It lit itself.
"Like you, I have found consolation in a different vice," she said. "Black Scopani. They grow the tobacco in total darkness. Do try some. You could waterproof roofs with it. I believe Igor makes cigars by rolling the leaves between his thighs."
She blew out a stream of smoke.
"Or someone's thighs, anyway. Of course, I am sorry for the Baroness. It must be so hard for a werewolf, realizing that she's raised a monster. As for the Baron, give him a bone and he's happy for hours."
Another stream of smoke.
"Do look after Angua. Happy families is not a popular game among the undead."
"You helped him come back, just like you did for me."
"Oh, he'd have come back anyway in time, some time when you weren't expecting him. He'd track Angua like a wolverine. Best that things ended today."
She gave him an appraising look through the smoke.
"You're good at anger, Your Grace. You save it up for when you need it."
"You couldn't have known I'd beat him. You left me in the snow. I wasn't even armed."
"Havelock Vetinari would not have sent a fool to Oberwald."
More smoke which writhed in the air.
"At least, not a stupid fool."
Vimes's eyes narrowed.
"You've met him, haven't you?"
"Yes."
"And taught him all he knows, right?"
She blew smoke down her nostrils and gave him a radiant smile.
"I'm sorry. You think I taught him?"
"My dear sir, as for what I've got out all this, well, a little breathing space. A little influence. Politics is more interesting than blood, Your Grace, and much more fun. Beware the reformed vampire, sir. The craving for blood is only a craving, and with care it can be diverted along different channels. Oberwald is going to need politicians. Ah, I believe we are here," she added, although Vimes could have sworn that she hadn't so much as glanced out of the window.
The door opened.
"If my Igor is still there, do tell him I will see him downtown. So nice to have met you. I'm sure we shall meet again. And do please present my fondest regards to Lord Vetinari."
The door shut behind Vimes, the coach moved off. He swore under his breath. The hall of the embassy was full of Igors. Several of them touched their forelocks, or at least the line of stitch marks, when they saw him. They were carrying heavy metal containers of varying sizes, on which frost crystals were forming.
"What's this?" he said. "Igor's funeral?"
Then it sank in.
"Oh, my gods, with party loot bags, everyone gets something to take home."
You could say that, sir. You could call it that," said an Igor. "But we think that putting bodies in the ground is rather gruesome. All those worms and things."
He tapped the tin box under his arm.
this way, he'll mostly be up and about again in no time," he added brightly.
"Reincarnation on the instalment plan, eh?" said Vimes weakly.
"Most amusing, sir," said the Igor gravely. "But it's amazing what people need. Hearts, livers, hands. We keep a list, sir, of deserving cases. By tonight, there will be some very lucky people in these parts."
"And these parts in some very lucky people."
"Well done, sir. I can see you are a wit. And one day, some poor soul will have a really nasty brain injury, and—"
He tapped the chili box again.
"What goes around comes around."
He nodded at Cheery and at Vimes.
"I must be going now, sir. So much to do. You know how it is."
"I can imagine," said Vimes. He thought, "The axe of my grandfather. You change the bits around, but there'll always be an Igor."
"They're really rather selfless people, sir," said Cheery,
when the last Igor had lurched off.
"They do a lot of good work. They even took his suit and his boots because they'll be useful to someone."
I know, but—"
"I know what you mean, sir. Everyone's in the drawing room. Lady Sybil said you'd be back. She said anyone with that look in their eye comes back."
"We're all going to the coronation. Might as well see this through. Is that what you'll be wearing, Cheery?"
"Yes, sir."
"But it's just ordinary dwarf clothes, trousers and everything."
"Yes, sir."
"But Sybil said you'd got a fetching little green number and a helmet with a feather in it."
"Yes, sir."
"You're free to wear whatever you want, you know that."
"Yes, sir. And then I thought about D, and I watched the King when he was talking to you, and, well, I can wear what I like, sir, that's the point. I don't have to wear that dress, and I shouldn't wear it just because other people don't want me to. Besides, it made me look like a rather stupid lettuce."
"That's all a bit complicated for me, Cheery."
"It's probably a dwarf thing, sir."
Vimes pushed open the doors to the drawing room. "It's over," he said.
"Did you hurt anyone?" said Sybil.
"Only Wolfgang."
"He'll be back," said Angua.
"No."
"You killed him?"
"No. I put him down." "I see you're up, Captain." Carrot got to his feet awkwardly and saluted. "Sorry, I haven't been much use, sir." "You just chose the wrong time to fight fair. Are you well enough to come?"
Angua and I want to stay here, if it's all right with you, sir. We've got things to talk about, and, do.